Before we start, I just want to say I just got back from Southern California, and I was able to – I was asked to put together a couple of videos to pay homage to my friend Gordon Fleming, who passed away last year. And I miss you, Gordon, and it was an honor to be able to do what I do and do what we did together. And to remember you. And I would like to ask people to go back and listen to episode 56. And that will explain a lot more. Professionally, it was the height of my career, I think. And I was able to really put my heart into a couple of pieces that meant more to me than everything else I've ever done combined. And to watch them play to an audience where they were so warmly received was an enormous honor. And I hate the fact that it had to be because Gordon is not with us anymore. Love you, Gordon. And please go listen to episode 56. He was a great friend and he died way too early. Anyway, thank you for letting me be personal once in a while. Share what's on my heart. This is episode 112 of The Grill, Funnel Cut Grill, with Eric Naso. Eric is a San Diego-based cinematographer, works for the local NBC affiliate there. I didn't ask him what the call letters are. I'm sure that somebody knows. And I also know that Michael Toe, who was on the show a few episodes again, he does some stuff for Peripherally. I can't remember exactly. There seemed to be a bit of a connection there. That was episode 109. Anyway, Eric's a great guy. He's kind of a camera nerd. If you haven't seen his website, ericnaso.com. I'm sorry, Eric, I think I'm pronouncing that right, Naso. He does all the camera reviews and the sliders and all that stuff. But great content, very well-respected guy. And, you know, he's an older guy like me, not as old as me. But, he's got some history, some broadcast background and chops. And so he comes to the digital cinematography world with a different different viewpoint than just, you know, the younger generation who just grabs a 5D and goes to town. But great interview. Now, what was interesting is there's been a lot of buzz on the Twitter about Eric Naso's using Final Cut 10. You got to get him on the show. And so I called him tweeted him whatever and said, hey, do you want to do this? He goes, yeah, sure, we'll do it. And as it turns out, and I didn't realize this, I thought he'd been using it for a few weeks. He's like, yeah, I'm going to start today. And I'm like, oh, really? So this might be a little premature. But basically what we do in this episode is I walk him through kind of that learning wall. I explain it to him. Now, I've done this on other episodes. You know, recently we had on episode 101, I had Frederick Van Johnson. And Frederick had been using the application for, I think, a few weeks, done a few tutorials, and he had some sort of, you know, I need to get started questions. Great episode, by the way, with Frederick. And so this is me kind of setting Eric straight right from the get-go. And we talk a lot about keywording and filtering and searching and stuff like that. And we touch a little bit on the library stuff. So if you're new to Final Cut, episode 112 is going to be a good one to listen to. And if you know people that are just getting started, send them to this episode. And you know, there's another episode that I did quite some time ago, and it was kind of a cop-out because I had somebody cancel on me at the last minute and I wanted to have an episode. Now I can't find it. It's just – oh, here. It's episode 59. 59 is another good one for somebody who's just getting started. So 59, 101, 112, that's how you get to No Final Cut Pro. At any rate, that's the interview with Eric today. I also want to thank the people at Premium Beat. I want to tell you that the two pieces that I made for Gordon this week, they were both done with Dan Phillipson tracks. And I love Dan. I love the emotions that Dan puts across in the tracks. And to be honest, one of them ended up being a tad short, and I had to loop a couple of bits just a touch. I will give you a hint as an editor. And this is just me talking about editing to music. I firmly believe that musicians and composers are much more in touch with their emotions and feelings than editors are, by and large. When that is the case, what I recommend that people do is, if you're trying to evoke an emotion, leave the track alone. Let the music speak for itself. Let it grow and develop the way the composer did, because 99% of the time, the composer is going to have a better grasp on the emotions that are in the track. And quite often, we'll like, oh, I can just stretch that, I can pull that, I can fix that again. And a lot of times when we do that, we tamper with the growth of a track and the way it evolves. And quite often, my first desire as an editor is to leave the track alone. So anyway, that's my little tip about editing to music. Let's get and thank you, Premium Beat, great curated music. Thank you for all the support for this last year. And also, I want to say, and I'm sorry this is kind of dragging on before we get to the interview, keep in mind, it's like 5, 6 to 7 weeks away, whatever. It's not too far away. NAB is coming, and I will be at the FCP Works demo suite, which is at the Renaissance Hotel. Check out the website, fcpworks.com. You can learn all about the different sessions that we're going to be doing there. It's all Final Cut all day, and it's going to be awesome. So check that out, say hi. If you come by, I will be there. Make sure you introduce yourself as a listener of The Grill. So anyway, let's go to the interview now with Eric Naso down in San Diego, and let's hear what it's like to be a brand new editor to Final Cut 10. Are you in a room with AC?
I'm in an edit bay. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, it kind of sounds like an edit bay. It sounds like a news edit bay.
Exactly. Well, I'm not in news. I'm in a production bay, but there's a bunch of stuff in here. There's like three computers. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Actually, it's kind of interesting. I don't know what if it's the Yeti doing it, but there's a really powerful gate on it that's gating out the AC when you're not talking.
Okay. I turned down the level a little bit. Is that better?
Yeah, that's fine.
And there's other – it's funny because actually I bought this mic for my son because he likes to play guitar and record himself. So I bought him this mic, and now I'm borrowing his mic from him a lot lately. So it's pretty funny. I have other settings on here.
We're good. It sounds good. It sounds good.
Oh, okay.
I'd leave it.
All right.
So, hey, welcome to the show. Thanks for being a part of The Grill here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Eric, I've been following you on Twitter for a long, long time. And, I'm not the camera guy. If you've listened to any of the shows, I don't know. I'm just an editor. So, but I've always been like, oh, there's Eric again. And I was just kind of reviewing stuff on your blog and stuff this morning. But so tell me a little bit about your background and I know, you know, we have some similarities coming from a broadcast background.
Yeah, I started actually as a photojournalist. That was my first job. And that was well over 20 plus years. 25, going on more. I don't know. I hate counting backwards.
It's hard.
But I started as a photojournalist. And the first market I worked in was Bakersfield, California. Everyone that lives in California has probably driven through there once and
the anus
didn't stop.
Of California.
But it was a small market. It was a KERO actually is where it was. And that was my first job. I started off as an intern sort of thing and just got worked my way in. Once you're in, you got to get in full on. And that was it. But the funny thing about working in that market is that the reporters edited the pieces. How horrible is that, right? So you go out and you basically shot your brains out all day long. You were shooting with a 3/4-inch camera and a
big old deck.
And they
never used your good stuff.
What?
And I said, and they never used your good stuff, right?
Oh man, always. And you know what? This is what you learn, though. It's a good thing. And in some ways, it was a good thing because I didn't shoot. I learned how not to shoot slop. Like if I didn't have the camera locked down with the perfect shot,
you didn't hit record.
I would not hit record because every time I was panning the shot over to take and then press the record button, they were like, it was like, oh, a swish pan. And they would use it. It would just be like, no, that's not a swish pan. That's me actually focusing and panning the camera while I was recording. But you know, it was a great experience. And actually, I grew a lot there. And then I started experimenting with, you know, shooting and editing NAT sound pieces. I was a National Press Photographer Association fan for a long time. And I learned a lot from them, went to their workshop in Oklahoma. And, you know, I just constantly applying myself. And editing became a big, big part of you know, my experience in news. And, you know, it was like my goal there was I got to go to a shop that lets me control the entire thing that way, you know, by shooting and editing. And so that's kind of the beginning, you know, and it's I love editing. It's really a big – it makes you a better, you know, shooter, a better – production guy, a DP, because you know what you need.
Totally agree. I've always thought that every editor should go shoot one story a year, and every shooter should go and cut one of their stories a year. You know,
absolutely. Maybe even more.
Yeah. Well, if you're in an area where you don't have the crossover, now you know, in the sort of we'll call it the sort of new school, you know, DSLR kids. You know, they shoot and cut, and it's no big deal to like install an edit application on your laptop and say, oh, look, I'm sitting on the plane cutting, or I'm sitting in my edit suite that's driven by my MacBook Pro and cutting a story. But, you know, I mean, when we were starting, to be able to get like access to an edit suite, you had to know your chops just to be allowed in that room, because nobody wanted to waste all that hardware on somebody who wasn't going to perform.
Oh, do you remember back when there was no nonlinear and you would walk into the two-deck bay and it had all these mixers?
Okay, so
and you'd look around and go, wow, this is control center.
Where I start,
this is awesome.
Exactly. Where I started, it was three one-inch machines that were approximately the size of a Frigidaire, right? a refrigerator from your kitchen. And the guy spent half of his time with his little Exolite Greenie in his hand going over to the decks and adjusting and twiddling things. No idea what he was doing, but he was very rarely actually editing.
He was tuning.
He was doing something, yeah. So, yeah, it's a different world, and I always say there's no such thing as the good old days of television, so.
Yeah, things have changed so much, and it's funny how, you know, nowadays we can just, you know, basically edit on our iPhone, you know, and I've actually been experimenting with that lately.
I know.
I don't want to go too deep in it. It's kind of like a little project that I'm working on in the background. But,
I totally understand. I completely agree.
It blows me away what we can do now, and I totally embrace technology. It's, you know, it's one of those things, if you don't embrace all these new things – you know, within 3 months, you're obsolete.
I know. You said something on your blog about, you know, wow, the camera technology is moving so fast these days. I mean, in olden days, you could buy, you know, an Ikigami or a Sony or whatever, throw it on your shoulder, because, yes, it was that big, and you could probably make money with that thing for 6 years.
Oh, yeah.
No problem. Wow. You know, and maybe even more. And frankly, the things were so damn expensive, you had to run them for 6 to 8 years to pay for them.
Right.
And actually make a profit.
Yeah.
So so from an editorial thing, now, are you working at the NBC affiliate in San Diego, correct?
Yes, I do.
Is that, and that's a full-time thing?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so it seems really cool. It looks like they give you a lot of opportunity to do, like, you're doing a lot of the promos and things like that, and you're shooting with, like, the C300, I believe?
Yeah, my main staple camera is the C300. And, you know, how it kind of evolved was I was shooting with the DVC Pro cameras for a long time here, and I never liked the look. And I always thought, wow, I think we could just do something more interesting. And so, like everybody in the world, when it was playing with the 5D Mark II, because it just opened up a whole new look for everyone, I really wanted to have that look. I wanted to have that filmic quality in our promos. And I experimented a little bit with the 5D Mark II, and I found it kind of frustrating to work with.
Right.
And then because I shoot sound here, you know, I don't. It's great for just B-roll, but when you need sound, then you're starting to. And our stuff is kind of quick turn. We don't have a lot of the. There's a friend of mine, John DiTarcio. He had this thing where he was talking about production at the speed of news, and that really does sort of explain how local television works. We don't have that awesome time span that, you know, you get when you're working in a bigger environment, production environment. So doing like, you know, two parts, you know, with sound and video separate and syncing and post, and I just didn't want to do it. So I had an AF100, and I was experimenting with the GH cameras from Panasonic. So I brought that in. I started using it, and wow! Like I told him, look, I wanted to try this, you know. And so, and my boss was like, yeah, all right, you know, we'll see what it's like. And they fell in love with it. Like that was it. It was game over. But we weren't using that camera anymore, and you know, we were renting cameras because at the time, you know, this was during the tough period during the recession when, you know, basically TV stations were laying everybody off, not buying new cameras, you know.
Right.
And so I would just bring my stuff in and we would use that. And then, you know, eventually we were actually renting, and I started renting the C100. And then there was a great opportunity. We can buy a camera. What camera do you want? Oh, man, that's a great question to ask me. So so that's when I got the C300. And we still use it. It's a great camera. It gives us what we need. And it's damn easy to edit. And I like that a lot about the files that it creates. It's a broadcast standard. That 50 megabits per second is awesome. But specs don't really matter in local television, at least here. I mean, I could use a GoPro or a GH4 or anything, just as long as it looks good. They don't care.
Yeah, it's color and it moves. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's the cable companies, you know, those Discovery Channels and all that. They got all these crazy specs you have to deal with. But these days, I don't even know if they're that stringent anymore because, you know, I don't know because I don't deal with them. But man, I mean, cameras are so good now, and it's just I don't want to just use one camera. I like using a bunch of stuff, and I kind of like experiment a lot at work. And I think that sounds a little bit nuts, but I've gotten to that comfort zone where I can take a camera, I can mess with it for a little while, and then I know what I want to do with it. And then I bring it to the station, and I'll use it. Like I use the GH4 in 4K and shot some news promos for sweeps, and it was fun. I had the 96 frames per second, and we were dropping, you know, it was a credit card thing, so we were dropping credit cards over the lens, and it was cool, right? Why not? And you know, and then I shot with the A7S when I got the Odyssey 7Q Plus. I shot it in 4K, and I did all this stuff, and incorporated that into a new promo, and that footage looks amazing. And I got to be able to play around and post with 4K footage, and actually reframing was a very powerful thing. And so, you know, these like I said, it's just these cameras and the technology and how easy it is. And how easy it is to work in post now. And, you know, it's just, dang, it's exciting. I'm thrilled. It's a great time to be alive.
I totally agree. Now, at the station you guys are using, I've heard you talking about this, you're using Creative Cloud and Premiere at the station.
Yeah, we were a Final Cut 7 station for a long time. Before that, we did the Avid Express Pro. Horrible thing. And we had an underpowered computer, which made it even more fun. Ugh. With no RAID drives or anything. So that was that was like walking fast in the mud, and it was painful. So when we got to Final Cut Pro 7 and when we finally switched over from PCs to Macs, that was awesome. Yeah. I really loved Final Cut 7. I mean, I was just like, you know, very, very pleased with that. And then we went to the cloud.
When did you go to?
It took a while. That has only been like about 2 years. Okay. We went to CS6 and we had CS5 and then 5.5, and then we moved to CS6. And then I think it's only been maybe less than a year that we actually got on the Creative Cloud.
Okay. So, and obviously Premiere is Premiere in 2015 or 14, whatever. It is the, I like to think of it as like the IBM of edit systems, edit platforms, because nobody's going to get fired for saying, oh, we should go to Creative Cloud. Right now it's safe. And that is the interesting thing, because I still believe that and I've had huge conversations with people about this, that a lot of decisions in our industry are made out of fear and not logically. You know, and so if you're worried about saying, hey, I want to try this thing, and you're worried about getting your ass fired in a year, you're gonna go right down the middle of the road. If you're doing film and big projects, you're doing Avid. If you're doing quick turnaround, corporate or news, it seems, Premiere, and I don't know, maybe larger markets are using Avid still in news. I don't really know. But the point of this show is, in your personal life, you've been playing around with Final Cut 10, right?
I've been teasing myself online and social media about it for a few weeks, maybe even a month or so, actually.
Yeah.
And every time, and I got to stop doing this, right? Because it's not a good thing. You have this experience and you're editing, and you're just stressed out of your brain because you got to get this thing done, and then the system crashes or it freezes and it doesn't save the last stuff you did. And then you get the warning from Premiere that says, hey, I got to close now because I just crashed. And you're like, hey,
good luck
thanks.
With that.
That sucks. And so, of course, I'll take a picture of it and I'll put it on Twitter and I'll go rant, 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 rant. And so, but it does what it does to me is it makes me want to try something different.
Yeah.
And it's okay, to try something different if it's going to work. But unfortunately, maybe let's go back a little bit.
Sure.
When Final Cut 7 was just, I was growing out of it. The station was growing out of it. We got tired of like transcoding, and there was this thing in the background happening with Final Cut 10. It was so not ready. I couldn't bring that app into my station. It was right. not ready. I needed a preview monitor. It wasn't capable of doing that at the time. It was very limited at what it could do, and I couldn't bring what I considered at the time beta software in a professional environment. So Premiere was probably the best choice for me. It was the best choice. It wasn't probably. Avid was too expensive. They were still doing the hardware stuff, and they weren't going to go for it. So I had to find something, because 7 was driving me crazy. We were just outgrowing it. So that's really the reason why we went to Premiere, was because of, kind of 7 falling, 10 falling on its face so early on in the game.
Right.
And, and then there was a lot of the anger and we all know the with the pitchforks and the burning of the stakes and all that fun stuff that happened. Man, NAB, remember that year? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That was crazy. So, so that's kind of why we moved to the Premiere side. And to be honest with you, it's been a good experience. I can't really complain too much. Nothing's perfect. We talk like that about cameras. There's no such thing as a perfect camera. There's no such thing as really perfect anything. You just want to get as close as possible. You want to get the job done. You want it to look good, and you don't want to lose too much sleep over it. So that's kind of where we went. Now, come to today, I'm seeing a lot of my friends, and I'm hearing and I'm reading, and they're happy with 10. 10's grown into, a true professional application. I mean, this last movie, Focus, completely edited on Final Cut 10. That's impressive.
Yeah, and that was just released yesterday on Apple's website, 2 days ago on Apple's website, the whole write-up about it.
Yeah, that's really cool, and that's the kind of stuff you want to hear, because that's the kind of application you want to know you can use. That one that will work for a feature film is impressive. That's a, what is it, a 2.5-hour movie or something, to be able to manage that long format. I mean, look, I work in the 15 and 30-second world, so I don't have to worry about that much, data or, being that organized. But when you're dealing with long format, right? I'm sure you do a lot of that kind of stuff, and your app's got to kick ass, or else you're going to be in trouble. That thing can't handle that much media and in keeping it all organized. So now I'm seeing all this stuff and I'm thinking, you know what, Nasa, you got to try this. This is it's time. Like, you know, it's not a waste of time. I think it is time to try it. So, yeah, I pulled the trigger 2 days ago. I went ahead and I did it. And now all I have to do is learn how to use it. I haven't really tried it yet. I'm still kind of cutting some promos that are due this week. I was hoping yesterday, actually, that I was going to be able to do some tutorials and just kind of get through the whole interface and learn how to put stuff in there. But I opened it up and I put a few clips from a personal project that I had. I was playing with the Nebula 4000,
right,
little handheld gimbal, and so I had some really nice GH4 footage, and I threw that into a bin and kind of, like I said, went to a friend of mine. He asked me, "Hey, how's it going?" I said, "Well, I really like how fast the scrubbing feature is. That's about all I got right now."
Well, this is interesting. I thought you had done I probably should have done more pre-production for this. I thought you had actually cut a few things in it. I think what we should probably do in this little chat is maybe go through some of the setup features and how to – because you're at a really good point here. I know you're going to do some tutorials, and that's great. Have you decided what you're going to do?
I have an Alinda.com account, and okay, I've been real happy with them. So I tend to lean on them for tutorials and stuff like that. But again, I just haven't done it yet, but I'm super excited about it. I just know I need to carve a few hours out, you know, just really, you know, brain drain it and just get it in my head and play.
One of the things I had a discussion with somebody recently about Linda, and they were asking me about something, and they referred to something, and when I took a look at it, I was like, oh no, that information is very stale. You want to absolutely make sure that the tutorials that you're watching are based on Final Cut 10.1, because 10.0, anything, 0.01, 0.02, 0.09, whatever, is a totally different workflow than 10.1.
Okay.
If you don't know that and you start learning some, like one of the tutorials goes into the making a sparse disk trick, which was really a great solve, or as Scott Simmons likes to say, you know, a workaround in the pre 10.1 era. It made perfect sense. It's a total waste in a 10.1 and beyond. And frankly, the 10.1.2 update changed things again. But it's, oh great, now there's a phone ringing.
I'm not going to guarantee you that someone's not going to bust into my edit bay and tell me that, hey, I need to make an update on a graphic. Your phone can ring.
Okay, so if you are a client of Slice Editorial and you're trying to call the office right now, I'm really sorry because I'm not going to answer it. I never know what to say anyway. They'll call Paul.
Hey, this is a day off for you, right? You're just working for me right now.
pretty much, right, yeah. So how about if – do you have Final Cut on a machine right there with you?
I don't. And I was going to download it on this machine at work yesterday, but I got challenged with this green screen shoot because, you know, no green screen shoot is really ever easy.
Right.
And I had some lighting issues. So anyway, we don't want to go too deep
with
that.
Don't sweat it.
Because
that
means I had to, that means I'm fighting a key today.
So let's walk through it. And you can main thing, make sure you're looking at tutorials that are current and not stale. And anything 10.0, you really want to just turn it off and ignore that. Unless, of course, you're talking about purely timeline stuff. But I think if quite often on the show I talk about the learning wall as opposed to the learning curve with Final Cut 10. And you're at the point where you're going to start hitting your forehead on the learning wall, okay? And the important thing is to realize that it's kind of like the difference between learning to ride a horse and various types of horses and then getting in a car for the first time. It's much different than a horse. But once you figure out the whole pedal thing and the steering wheel, you're going to love it. Okay.
Yeah. And I keep hearing that. So you know what? It's like, and that's very encouraging. And I think that because that's a big one that everyone's telling me this is that just – don't think you can open it and figure it out. So that's great advice,
right?
Because you won't. It's like Rubik's Cube, and they're all black. All the colors are black. So that's great. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to try to figure it out.
I did make a joke
on my Facebook page that I opened up the app and I stared at it, and I was just kind of surprised that it wasn't reading my mind. Because I thought it was a really new advanced app, man.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So it didn't just start editing.
So here, like, for example, I'm looking at the lynda.com website, and under editor's picks, there are two Final Cut 10 tutorials, one Premiere Pro and one After Effects. Both Final Cut 10 tutorials are 10.0.9. You don't even want to watch those. What I would really recommend, and I'm not saying anything bad about Lynda. I had a Lynda subscription for a long time, and there's a lot of good stuff there. But part of the – and I apologize, Lynda. Part of the problem with Lynda is the vastness of it also means that they might have some old stuff. And with Final Cut 10, this is a really big deal. So what you got when we switched over to the 10.1 era is we got – what's called the library structure. And the library file, which is, if you're looking at it, it looks like a purple Windows logo. The library file, to translate to, let's say, like Final Cut 7 language, it's kind of the combination of the project file that you would launch and the scratch disk all wrapped up in one.
Mm.
Okay? So in the... In the default, what I like to call soccer dad mode, if you just start a new library and start importing files, it's going to put those files inside the library file. And that's not the end of the world. It's a safe way to work because everything is self-contained. But there are clearly some advantages, especially in what you will eventually possibly be doing, working in a shared environment like a news station, where you want to be able to draw assets from various projects or have remote people be adding assets to a project. Okay, so like I'm sitting in the edit suite and I might get a phone call or, you know, somebody will yell from down the hall, "Hey, your graphics are ready." And he's been able to put things into an external media storage location that's separate from the library location. So the important thing is to remember is, where do you want to actually store your media? The other problem with using the library file being the storage location is it means that automatically you're going to have two copies of your media.
Yeah, okay. That's not good.
Yeah, and that's kind of – it's obviously redundant. And the problem is that in most people's situation, those two copies end up being on the exact same hard drive. So it's not even like it's a safety thing, okay?
Right.
Because if that drive goes down, hey, I lost my primary and my backup.
Yeah, that's not good.
So what you want to do is you want to learn how to deal with that. And in most – I don't know what your workflow is, but when I work with any sort of – you know, IT-based workflow where I'm dealing with files as opposed to tape, the first thing I'm doing is I'm copying my files onto my drive, and then I'm bringing my files or links to my files into my edit software, and then I start my editorial process. Okay?
Hey, let me ask you something about that. Now, I thought in the past that everything that came into Final Cut Pro – is it 10 or X? I know that's a stupid question.
No, it's actually a really good question. And in today's day and age, I think about 60% of the people say 10. I say 10. I believe the people at Apple say 10. Okay. It's OS 10. I guess some people say OS X. It just sounds retarded, I think. I'm sorry.
I know. It's funny because I have the same problem with AJA. It's like, is it
AJA or AJA?
AJA? AJA? Anyway, no, when you bring stuff in, it used to, maybe it doesn't do this anymore, but it would convert everything, transcode in the background to ProRes. But that's not the case anymore?
It actually can be the case. And there are many people that swear Alex Lindsay is an interesting cat. He wants his – in Alex's world, absolutely everything gets transcoded into the primary – format, frame size, and frame rate before you bring it into any edit system. So he says, we're doing 1080p, we're doing ProRes HQ, and everything will be transcoded outside of the application and then brought into the application. I think Alex is a bit extreme in that standard, and I will tell you, for the last 2.5 years, I have and we do shoot a lot of DSLR. We also have some of the A7Ss, and we just bought the new Sony, what is it, FS7, something like that. It's kind of nice. Cool. It's a 4K camera. We just bought one of those. But in our world, 2.5 years ago, I did a job where, because of time constraints, I didn't even have time to transcode everything. And in Final Cut 10, there's actually a switch that allows you to turn off the transcode in the background feature.
Okay.
And it dawned on me as I was prepping for this job, why is that switch there if it has to be transcoded? So I just turned it off. And I was doing 5D Mark II footage back then. Or was it 3? I can't remember. 2012, did we have the 5D Mark III yet?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't matter. It's the same kind of file.
15, I think.
So all of the footage for – and I imported 1.2 terabytes of H.264 5D Mark III footage over the course of 2 weeks, and I transcoded none of it, and I had no problems whatsoever.
All right. Well, that saves a lot of space.
It saves a lot of space. Also saves a lot of time. Even if it is, quote unquote, doing it in the background, it's wasted processor cycles when you could be doing something, you know, more important. If it doesn't need to be transcoded, why bother?
Exactly.
So again, there's two camps there. There's totally two camps there. Alex Lindsay says, nope, transcode everything. Chris Fenwick says, eh.
You know? So well, I like the yeah, that's better.
So what I would recommend you do is that you give it a try with the footage that you're using, and you know, maybe do one by transcoding and one by not. Now, if you choose to transcode and you let the application do it, it's the best possible way to do it, I think. And this is why Final Cut is going to manage everything for you. So and one of the best ways of learning how the application is thinking, and this, as a professional, I know this goes against our grain, but try and imagine if you were going to invent an edit system for your mom or your dad to use, how would you want to make it easier for them? And if you think about it like that and then say, okay, then what is Final Cut 10 actually doing for me? It usually kind of helps you. And again, professionals, you know, somebody said, I think it was was it Alex Golner online said something about, it was Sam Messman, I believe. Professional is just a euphemism for complicated.
I like that.
And so a lot of times, you know, we kind of, you know, in a sort of nerdy, egotistical way, we sort of revel in the complexity of what we do because we think it's going to separate us from amateurs. And to be clear, nobody actually says that out loud.
Yeah.
But we're just thinking it, okay?
Yeah.
So what Final Cut 10 will do if you choose to transcode is you will have one folder of all of your media on your drive. And again, this is in the default settings. Until you start to change it, you'll hit import. And in the import window, in the import Final Cut 10 preferences screen, there is a little checkbox that says transcode my media. So what it will do is it will look at the media that's in your media folder. It will, at first, it will make temporary links to that media. So you'll be able to see it and cut it immediately, even though it's still transcoding in the background. And then what it does is sort of magically in the background, little elves are changing all the file formats.
And doesn't slow it down.
It does a little bit, but not horribly so. And really, that depends on the complexity of what you are actually doing and the power of your machine. Richard Taylor just posted a blog entry this morning on his website about Final Cut 10, and it was like 20 different things that could be causing your system to slow down. Great read, by the way, Richard. And what I would recommend is you look at that. But one very high up on his list is, do you have a current machine? Because Final Cut 10 is very modern software. And if you have an old machine and you don't have enough VRAM, you don't have enough system RAM, sorry, but you should have a new machine. So, I will say that one of the things that I have been, I'll say, blessed with is the fact that I work at a place where we do buy new machines. And I think I am possibly a little bit insensitive to people that are on machines that are 4 or more years old. And frankly, if you can get a modern machine, and even Richard Taylor was saying on his, I believe it was an 6-core Mac Pro, like a 2009, you know, pre-trash can. He says that Final Cut 10 works better on his 2013 iMac than it does on the Mac Pro. So
that makes sense. Now, at work here, I mean, this year, next year, we're gonna move over to the new Mac Pros. But here now, I have a mid 2010 version. Was it 10.10.2? So it's like a 6-core Intel Xeon, and it works pretty well with the CUDA card with Premiere because I got that Quattro 4000 in here,
right?
But I don't think that. But Final Cut 10 or X is not going to use any of that kind of graphics processing that like Premiere does. So
not entirely. Like, not entirely. Final Cut 10 is very much. very much benefits from a good GPU. A lot of the processes in Final Cut 10 are handled by the GPU. As a matter of fact, there was an upgrade, I believe, I want to say it was like 10.06, 07, 08, something like that, where they moved, like wholesale, they moved a whole bunch of stuff into the GPU. And there were some people that were reporting that certain processes were increasing by something ridiculous, like 2,500% in speed. And so, and that's all stuff. I mean, we don't even need to discuss that. It's all part of how Final Cut 10 works really fast today. But there was a time when less stuff was on the GPU. So we benefit from all of the upgrades that have happened prior to this day right now.
So, you know what, Chris?
Yeah.
As we were talking, I downloaded Final Cut Pro 10 on this computer, and I am now looking at it right now.
Okay, let me launch it too, and we can walk through a couple of things that'll help you out. And again, this is interesting. I did not know that you were so fresh to it, but I think this is interesting.
I'm like baked bread that just came out of the oven.
Well, let's back up before we put all the ingredients in the oven because there's a few things we still want to do.
Uh-oh, I burned one side.
Yeah. So in your library in the upper left-hand corner, you have, again, the little purple Windows logo, as I call it, the library file. And again, if I right-click on that and say Reveal in Finder, it will show me where that file actually lives on in my Finder, okay? And if you look at that, if you start importing a bunch of camera footage, that file is going to get really big really quick, okay? Okay. So, and again, that might be a great way to work. Now, before we get into taking apart the library file, I want to finish this transcode stuff that we were just talking about.
Sorry.
That's fine. So if you go to, if you click on, let me think, what do I want to click on over here? Do Command-I for import. And you get that import window. Anything that you import at that point is in its default set is just going to go into the library file. Okay.
And that, oh yeah, that's going into like movies. Mac, that's no good.
Well, yeah. It only if that's where your library is stored. You can. One of the nice things about the library system is that you can store that library file on any drive, any volume, any RAID that you want, as long as it is locally attached. You cannot install across a network. Okay. There's some stipulation about that. If it's a SAN, I think you can, but not like across an Ethernet network on another drive. And there are whole discussions I've had on other episodes about how you can work that way if you want. But we won't get into that at this point. Training wheels. So now
I do have a Meteor RAID. So I that's probably perfect. Would want to move everything to, you know, a new Final Cut 10 folder on there.
Yeah. What I would do, and in my workflow, I have a separate folder for every project, and those folders live on a RAID, and then I have a library file inside each one of those folders, and that library is for that job. And again, this keeps an individual job completely self-contained. Okay. Now, when you start a library, it immediately will create an event. And there has been much talk about this. And I will say that 99% of the time, I only want one event per library. Now, there's some really good reasons why that's not necessarily the best way to work. And there are some workflows that definitely benefit from the idea of having multiple events inside the library. But I'll tell you that for starters, just worry about creating one event per library. And if you find yourself creating multiple events, figure out how you did it. And because I would just say for a beginner, one event per library. Now, inside your event, you can create keyword collections or folders. The problem is the only thing that you can put in a folder is a keyword collection. So one of the big stumbling blocks for somebody getting started is saying, why can't I just put files in this folder? You know, why can't I drag files, you know, media files into this folder called the, you know, you create a folder called this is my media from card number one. Why can't I put my files there? Because it doesn't work that way. It's a folder. The folder structure is for organizing your keyword collections. Now, one of the other things I tell people that are just getting started is if you just sort of kind of in your mind think of a keyword collection as being the same thing as a bin, that's one of the easiest ways to get over the learning wall. Now, you're hampering yourself because keyword collections are much more powerful than a bin. But if you just want to get started, here's a keyword collection. Call it A1 for camera A, card one. And then import your footage from camera A, card one into that keyword collection. Mm-hmm. And you'll be okay. In your mind, go ahead and just say it's a bin. Now, where you're going to find that you're going to benefit from this is that those keyword collections are not bins. And when it comes to the organizational structure, you can, quote unquote, put a clip into multiple bins or keyword collections. And the proper way of saying it is I can assign many keywords to a clip. So, for example, I was looking at your Nebula demo video at the mission, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could keyword everything as mission. You could keyword it as camera A, card one. You could keyword it as interiors or exteriors. You could do a whole keyword for candle shots. You could do a whole keyword of statues. You could do a keyword of the bell tower. And then that way you can organize like shots very quickly but if you think about it, well, the bell tower is an exterior shot. Yes, it is, but you don't have to limit it to just the bell tower or just the exterior. You can assign that two different keywords to one clip and it will quote unquote appear in both of those bins. And they're not really bins, they're keyword collections. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sounds very – that's powerful organization.
So from
– Probably save you time later, right?
Oh, totally. So from an organizational standpoint, you're going to say you have the potential of saving a ton of time when you sort of get over that learning wall and see that they're not really bins, they're keyword collections. But to start, just imagine that they're a bin and you'll get and it'll get you very far. The other thing to keep in mind as you're looking for and sorting data is that there are three ways to limit what you are actually looking at in your browser. Okay? So the first thing is the keyword collection. So if I click on A1 in my browser, I'm only seeing the clips that were imported with that keyword collection A1. Okay? But there's two other ways to sift through the data, if you will. If you're looking at the browser in the upper left-hand corner, it probably says all clips with a little pull-down menu. You see that?
Pull-down menu, all clips.
So just to the right of where it says libraries in the upper left-hand corner of the window, you see where it says all clips?
Yeah, it says hide, rejected, import media, nothing loaded.
Right. So so that's actually a very powerful little tool there. So let's say you bring in 100 clips and you start stepping through them and you go, ugh, I've shot my foot. Hit the delete key.
Right.
Okay. By hitting the delete key, you are rejecting that shot. You're not throwing it away. You're not making the media go away. You're just tagging it, if you will, as a rejected clip. Okay. And then you could say, oh, here I am. I'm shooting the chip chart again. Delete, delete. I don't need to look at that until I need to color, blah, 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 blah. Or you could say, oh, my God, the lens was dirty for the first half hour. Select all those. Delete those. Whatever. So those are now your rejected clips. And if you pull down to hide rejected, you have now sifted through your media one additional way. Now I don't have to look at the ones I didn't want to look at.
Okay. That's pretty cool. So you got favorites, rejected, unused, no ratings. This is all going to just basically show you what you want to see as opposed to all the clips at once.
Exactly right. Okay. Now, the favorites works the opposite of rejected. Anything that I star, and how do you star something? Oh, you hit the letter F to star it. You go, oh, favorite that, favorite that, favorite that. Now, here again is something that's immensely powerful. So let's go back to your mission video with the nebula, okay? So let's say, and I'm not a camera guy, so bear with me. I might say stuff that sounds stupid. But let's say you take your nebula and you like start the camera. And just for practicality's sakes, you might do, as is the case I know with Steadicams or jib shots, a lot of times you do really long takes. Like, oh, here I'm on the jib and I'm going to do 5 passes going over the hood of this guy's car. And one of those will be good. Well, I don't want to star the whole clip because now I got to figure out which one of the takes is good. But let's say you're shuttling through your footage, right? Shuttle, shuttle. Oh, take 4 was the one. You can now hit the letter R on your keyboard. That's your range based. Or you could just use I and O. And you can mark the beginning and end of the good take. Now hit the letter F. So now what you've done is you've done a range-based selection or a favorite. And so when I then pull my little pull-down menu down and say, just show me my favorites, it will only show me take 4 of that long clip. Okay.
Cool.
Again, another way to sift through your data. The other thing is, let's say you have a really long Steadicam shot and it was great walking through the doorway. And then I tripped on the third step and then I got down to the driveway and I did a great pass around the front of the guy's car. Okay, that was good. I can favorite multiple portions of a shot using the letter F. And when I sort by favorites, that one clip will show up as 2 favorites in my browser, but just marking the in and outs of the good parts I actually really liked.
Nice.
Now, this is a little bit different than Final Cut 7 where you subclipped. Remember subclip?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to subclip. The problem with a subclip is once you marked a subclip, correct me if I'm wrong, as I remember it, you couldn't drag a handle out past the beginning or end of the subclip.
It was just like a new clip, you'd have to resub it.
Stupid.
Go back to the original.
Yeah, stupid. So the difference with a favorite is it really is just marked in and out a portion of the clip. If you change your mind, you want to stretch it out a few frames or seconds or minutes, it's all that media is still available.
Nice.
So it's not a subclip. So, yeah, I was never a fan of subclipping. I didn't get it at all.
I don't do it. I never do it.
Yeah.
I like you were kind of describing, and even in Premiere, I would just go through my footage and start putting in and out points and then go to the next one. It doesn't do anything other than it remembers that right. clip has an in and out point.
Yeah, it remembers that it's an in and out point, but still in the, you know, in the, I really like the idea of favorites. I don't know why it resonates so well with me, but favoriting in Final Cut 10 and range-based favoriting is extremely powerful. Okay. And then, so let me think, what else is there in that pull down? So I can look at, unused. So let's say you have your 100 clips and you've cut your whole thing of the mission, but the music is a little longer than you had planned on. And I've come up a little short. Well, what have I not used? So go to all clips and show me.
Oh,
unused.
I like that. I like that a lot because that's going to save me a ton of time. And it's the same thing when I'm building like say that Nebula thing, I shot a bunch of stuff, And then I don't even score it like first off. I just throw my favorite shots on the timeline and it's some similar type of sequence that I'm probably going to use, but it all goes in there. And then once it's in the timeline, I can hit unused and then I can see what clips are not in the timeline.
Correct.
And
it's actually again, Eric, it's even more, it's more important than that. So let's go back to that jib shot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We decided clip four or take four was the best, and that was what we favorited, and that's what we put into the timeline. Now when I show unused, it's going to take the remaining portions of that long jib clip, and it's going to I'm going to have one quote-unquote clip in my timeline that is takes one through three and another clip in my timeline that is take five. So
nice.
It's the unused portions. So yeah,
okay, gotcha.
It's not just the unused clip; it's the unused portion. It's very powerful.
That's cool.
And actually, I'm gonna caveat that by saying I'm pretty sure what I just said is right. Okay, the third way that you can sift through your data, and again, Final Cut 10 is a database of your imagery, okay? The third way that you can sift through your data on the far right-hand side of the browser window, not of the whole user interface, is a little find box like iTunes has where you can actually type in the name of something, okay? So let's say you start keywording things. Let's say you start labeling things. As a matter of fact, if you look at your list there, or excuse me, your browser in list mode, which you can do. I'll show you how to do that in a second. There's also a notes column. And if you want to, you can type in notes about all your stuff. And the little find box up there works the same way that iTunes does. As I start to type, it filters the list of stuff in the database. I'll give you a great example of where this works great when you're dealing with camera footage. So let's say, and I saw on your blog you had your tutorial about how to rename files from the A7S. But let's say you're looking at your files and you've numbered them, you know, sequentially from 001 to 999, and you're going through the footage and you go, "Ugh, I really like the shot to number 237." Is there anything else around that time frame that's good, right? So go to the little find box and type in, you know, whatever your prefix is, you know, like nebula underscore 23. Now it's going to filter your data down to be 230, 231, 232, 234, 235, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Mm-hmm. And so you started at 237, and right now, boom, I have like all the shots right around that shot. Really quickly to see, oh, did I do another take of that?
Oh, nice.
You know? So, and the find box, as you start applying more metadata to your footage, becomes really powerful. I do a lot of, you know, corporate interview type things where we might interview 20 different people. And I always, you know, keyword that stuff based on the person's name. So if it's Tom Smith and I go, oh, I got to go look at Tom's soundbites again. I can sort by Tom and then I can filter by unused. And now I have all the unused stuff of Tom in case I want to find, you know, fatten up the content a little more.
Nice.
All right. So that's all about just filtering the data that's in your big giant data soup of the media that you've imported. Now, I mentioned earlier I was going to tell you how to do the I think by default it sorts by icon mode. And down at the bottom of the library list, right above the gray bar that goes all the way across the screen, there are two little icons. Well, there's four icons. One will hide your library. One allows you to sort the data in the library by content created, date imported. It's the little gear. And then the other two icons change between looking at icon mode and looking at list mode.
Yeah, see and that. Yeah.
List mode feels very much like Icon and list mode is the same as most edit systems, but it gives you access to like the notes field, the time code start time, so if you want to sort by time code, whatever. So those are very important.
Hey, can I go backwards one second?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so at default right now, it wants to put my projects in this folder movies.
Right.
Which I use very seldom because I don't like to save anything on my
– Of course not.
On my hard drive. So how – now, I guess it's probably pretty simple. And this is probably the first question and answer that everybody needs is to where to put your media, right?
Right.
So let's set this thing up right. Let's put it on my media RAID. So how would I go about doing that right off the bat?
Okay. This is – we're going to learn a couple of things here. You know that it's in the movies folder, so quit Final Cut Pro.
Just
quit it.
Okay, quit.
So now you're out at your Finder. Go into your home folder and your movies folder, and in there is your library file.
It says untitled Fine. FCP bundle.
it calls it an untitled FCP dot bundle?
It just called it untitled dot FCP bundle.
Oh, okay.
I didn't. I think
so the dot, and so click on it and do get info.
Okay. Get info.
Now, the reason it's called .fcp bundle is under names and name and extensions, there's a little checkbox called hide extension.
It's checked.
It should be unchecked.
Yeah, it's – I mean, I guess it defaulted, but it's checked. I could uncheck it and then
– Well, when I have it – did you do get info while you had that – bundle selected?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's showing it on the top. It's only like 156 kilobyte file.
Right. No, it's tiny because you haven't imported anything. At any rate, you can hide or show that .fcp bundle extension by using that thing.
Okay. I'll turn it off and then
Finder tricks with Chris Fenwick.
I know. Everybody's going to be like, God, man, that NASO guy is kind of dumb.
So what I would do, take that library and drag it over to your media drive.
Okay. That sounds like something I could do. Let's see here. Make a new folder? No.
What I would here's what I would do. Make a folder on your media drive called Eric's FCPX Practice or something like that.
Okay.
Don't touch.
I know, right? It's funny. And this was like, now on my media RAID, I have a scratch disk. It's only for Premiere Pro. Every project, all the video, every project goes into that. Is there a kind of a file structure that I should be doing for Final Cut 10 that's similar so that everything stays separate?
Well,
or does it like to use hard drive that way?
We are 55 minutes into this interview, and you asked me about file structure. I could talk for hours just on that.
Okay.
I think the important thing to do in a nutshell is decide a way to work and continue to work that way. My preferred work method is to have a separate job folder for every job. Inside that job folder is a library file, and then there is a folder structure for all of my types of media that I use in that job. Camera footage, audio files, graphic files, animation files, you know, things like that. I also have a folder for scripts and other documents. I also have a folder called Original, where I take everything that was created, that was given to me by a client, and I put those original documents in there.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe if I just made up like a FCPX folder and then inside that folder is all the individual projects. Does that make sense?
Say that one more time.
If I make an FCP10 folder inside my media RAID.
Right.
And then just put everything in there, individual projects in that folder.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Okay, so then – now that you have that there, let me just – I'm double-checking something. What I would do now is when that library is there, go back to your movies folder and delete that one. Just drag it to the trash. Don't empty the trash yet. Just move it to the trash.
Done.
And I'm a, and I don't think you have anything in it, so this is really kind of overkill to do it this way. I'm just, you know, if you had imported anything. And then from your media drive, double click on the library that you just moved over there.
Okay. And then it'll probably open up Final Cut. And then there it goes. Okay.
Now, had you had a bunch of media in there, Eric, Final Cut, here's an important thing to remember. Final Cut 10 saves media with absolute file pathways, okay? Meaning it will, if you had imported a bunch of media into that library, it would be saying, hey, I'm looking at Eric's hard drive / movies / untitled.fcp bundle, and there's no stuff there. And that, right. And so if that were the case, what you would need to do is you select the library, go file, relink files, and it's pretty straightforward. You can mess around with that. And basically you go find the folder where all the stuff should be and say, yeah, it's here. Search through that folder. And then it goes, oh, yeah, I got it. Never mind.
Okay.
So at that point, what I would do if I were you is in that job folder, I would create a folder called media. I would drag my camera media into that folder, and that's where I would, and once the copy is over, that's where I would import my media from.
Okay.
Now, I'll have to go back and look, but there are many discussions that we've had on this show about some more advanced ways of dealing with storage locations. And what I'm going to do, I won't go into all the details. And frankly, if you'd like, we could do a whole nother show about just this. Mm-hmm. But if you click on the library over there that you can, by the way, rename from within Final Cut Pro, and it will actually change the library file name out in the Finder. But if you click on that, and then in the far right side of the user interface bar that goes across the center of the screen, there's a little button that looks like two little sliders. And if you click that, you're at your, what do they call that window?
Looks like a viewer.
Yeah, it's a little viewer. It's not called a viewer. What is it called? The attributes? I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank. But if you look in there, you have the library selected on the far left, and you click on that little pop-out window, the library properties window, the library properties. There's a thing called, it says storage location, modify settings. Click on that, and what you'll see is that the media and the cache are stored in the library, and the backups are stored in Final Cut Backups. So the backups are like your old Final Cut 7 backup project files, okay? And the media and the cache is where Final Cut would transcode camera originals, where it would create proxy files. Any media that Final Cut 10 creates will go in that storage location. And putting it in the library, again, a safe way to work, a sort of, I'll call it again, I call it the soccer dad way of working. In a shared environment, you probably need to store that media in a different location, because what you benefit from that is what we call the lean library approach. And the lean library means that library file is not a combination of the Final Cut 7 project file and the scratch disk. It now becomes very much like the old project file was, with the new storage location that you assign through the storage location properties being basically the equivalent of the old scratch disk.
Okay.
And again, from the beginning standpoint, you go, damn you, Apple, why didn't you just leave well enough alone? And what you find is that, and I happen to know, I'm just going to say I happen to know that Apple used to deal with a lot of tech problems with people losing their storage location. So the theory was, in its default setting, we will make Final Cut 10 drop-dead simple to use. And it is. By making the library file be the combo project/scratch disk, it means everything is safe. It's a big file. It could be a very big file, but at least it's safe. If you know what you're doing and you're a pro, then fine. Learn how to do this, modify settings, pick a different location. And in my world, I create a folder inside my job folder that sits right next to my library file. And you could call that anything. You could call it scratch disk if you want. I actually use the term FCPX created. And that may not be the best term. And I came up with it a few months ago, and I rethink it every day. But but in our office, we call that FCPX created. And I store the media and the cache in that location.
Okay.
And now at that point, you're ready to start importing your files. And now you only have to deal with the magnetic timeline. So you're going to have a lot of fun.
Can you repeat that first part? No, I'm kidding.
No, but you can rewind this podcast and listen to the whole thing.
I know. I just got my first tutorial. This is awesome.
Yeah. And actually, you know what? There's a great tutorial if you want a tutorial. There's a great episode with Frederick Van Johnson about, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 episodes ago, where we basically did a similar thing where he was just getting started. He had actually spent about 3 or 4 days with it and then had a bunch of questions for me.
Mm.
And so that's a great episode. You might want to listen to that one.
Okay.
And I don't know if the phrase – I'm thinking about how horrible my metadata is on the podcast. I don't know if the term lean library shows up. If you go to digitalcinemacafe.com, that's where both the podcast Digital Cinema Cafe and FCPX Grill is stored or hosted, I'll say. I just realized when I say the letters FCPX, I say X. That's weird.
See, now you're going to be thinking about it because I asked you.
Well, no, I always call it FCPX Grill. I actually just call it the Grill. Whatever. Ah, damn you, Apple. Change. Let me just do this right here. Oh, compelling radio, people. Digital Cinema Cafe. Search for the word library, maybe? The library model. Yeah. So FC Funnel Cut Grill number 25. We talk about the library. Ben Broadbeck, 104. Folder aliasing. John Davidson, we talk about the library. Yeah, so if you search for the word library, it pops up a lot.
Okay, cool.
But definitely listen to the episode with Frederick Van Johnson. I think you'll enjoy that. I hope you don't think this was a waste of time. I enjoyed this conversation.
No, I think it's great. And I apologize, too, that I'm not more advanced. But maybe that kind of shows that,
you know what,
I think there's a lot of people that probably in my situation where they want to try something new and this is not that, you know, jump in not with no knowledge kind of a system. You kind of got to get your arms around it a little bit. So I think that is it's a good thing.
Yeah,
good thing for people to know.
I have always said that these conversations are at all levels. You know, there are people, I had Michael Matzdorf on the show, who was the assistant editor on Focus. And he,
oh, nice.
You know, he's talking about stuff at the highest level. I don't think we were allowed to say the name Focus, but that's what we were talking about, people. because the press had not come out about the movie yet. But I've had, you know, Michael Matzdorf. I have people that have done music videos at every level. And including, you know, people like yourself or Frederick who are literally just getting started. So I think the conversation does help. I think it's good to be able to have a conversation where somebody isn't like telling you you're an idiot for not using Avid.
Yeah, no, I don't see Avid in my future at all. I'll experiment with some things, but I'm not going to go there. That's Eric, too expensive for me. I can deal with two different editors. I'm not sure Avid can do as much different than what I can do in Premiere, where this is very different. And you know what? It's good. You gotta branch out, spread your wings, try new things. I'm a big fan of that. And just as long as it's not a waste of time. And that's why I'm doing this now, because I don't think it's a waste of time. I think this app is ready for me. I think you have to have the right attitude when you're jumping in. You don't want to jump into anything kind of being skeptical, I don't think. I think you kind of got to jump into stuff and feel like, yeah, this is going to work, and you just want to know how to make it work. That's just me.
Good words of wisdom. Let's wrap it up with that. Eric, if people want to follow your blog and you on Twitter and Facebook and stuff, how do they find you?
EricNaso.com. That's E-R-I-K. The other Eric. And it's the same thing with Twitter. It's at Eric Naso. And, that's pretty much it. You can go. I have a Facebook page too. I really am enjoying Facebook because the conversations are longer, and Twitter's fun for, you know, quick stuff. But look me up on Facebook at EricNaso.com. We have a good time on there because I like to throw out some questions, or I'll put some pictures up, and the conversations are good.
I'm also very interested to hear, after you've messed with the software for a while, if you actually use I think in Final Cut, here, I look at it, they call it the event viewer. You had called it the preview monitor before. I'm very interested to see if you actually use it. It's a very interesting history around the event viewer. When Final Cut 10 first came out, Apple did not have it. And everybody's like, damn you, Apple, you don't know what you're doing. You're not professional, blah, 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 blah. And then they said, okay, fine, here's the event viewer. And it is my experience that nobody uses it. I don't know anybody who actually uses it. So we'll see. I'll be interested to see if you actually end up using it.
All right. Well, you know, I'm excited to use it in the weekend. I got a lot of stuff going on. I have some fun stuff coming up that maybe I can, kind of get my feet wet with this thing with no time limits. So that's probably – I don't want to stress myself out and try to actually deliver something yet.
So, right.
But I definitely want to watch at least an hour of, you know, my first Final Cut X tutorial to really visualize it. I'm really a visual person. I love it. I love tutorials and all that fun stuff.
Cool.
Big fan of learning.
Just make sure you watch the fresh ones.
Yeah, and that was a good point, because I would have dived into Linda probably late this afternoon and been learning the wrong version. Yeah. So 10.1, 10.2 is what I need to look for.
It's 10.1. Or beyond, 10.10, 10.11, 10.12. Your current version is 10.14. And I will say that the stuff that Ripple Training has, they have updated stuff since 10.1, and I'm a huge fan of Ripple Training.
All right,
is the only tutorials I've ever bought specifically. I had a Lynda account for about a year, but Ripple Training is the only tutorials I ever bought. I bought it when Final Cut 10 first came out. I looked at it, I was like, oh, this sucks, and I stopped using it for a year before I picked it up again.
That's awesome. So the rest of my day is fixing my own bad lighting on a green screen. That'll be fun.
That'll be great. All right, Eric. Have a great day. Thanks for chatting.
Thanks for having me, Chris. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, so I hope that works out okay for you. Again, I was a bit shocked that Eric had not quite started working with the software, but I still think, and you know, we talked about it, Eric and I talked about it a little bit after we started recording. I firmly believe that every one of these conversations has benefit to certain types of people, and there are plenty of people that are trying to get over that learning wall that could very easily get held up. And I think that some of the stuff that we talked about in this episode is very germane to somebody just getting started. So Final Cut Grill 112 is going to be a good one for anybody just getting started with the software. So thanks again for listening. I look forward to seeing all of you, hopefully, at NAB in a few weeks. Again, we'll be at the FCP Works booth at the Renaissance Hotel. Make sure you check out their website to find out exactly what we're talking about and all the details. And come by, say hi. Look forward to it. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Grill. Later, later.